And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So Offaly are the champions, led by Michael Bond. It's been a long, long season for them. The fans have travelled every part of the championship with their team. And the side that got beaten in the Leinster final have come good in the final of the All-Ireland itself.
So there you go, Jerk Hanning. The side that were beaten in the Leinster final have come good in the All-Ireland. And it's not just coming good in the All-Ireland, it's their journey back to the All-Ireland, Brian, I suppose. It's like, I mean, that Leinster final loss just kicked off a whole load of, a series of incredible stories throughout that summer.
As Hubert Rigney said, we came in through the back door, but we're going out through the front. yeah, brilliant line from Hubert. A man of very few words, but he spoke very well that day when he received the cup.
That was the first ever backdoor win, obviously. It was the first ever All-Leinster, All-Ireland final. We had an All-Munster one the year before.
Yeah, it was amazing that when they did bring in that qualifier system, you know, only in 1997, that we saw an All-Munster final in 97, All-Leinster in 98. You know, it looked like Munster was so dominant, but it was amazing kind of way, just the way it turned out. But as you said, from the Leinster final, the whatever 5 or 6 weeks thereafter was just crazy, you know, from Babs Keaton being given the road, strong leadership from Brendan Ward as county chairman. Johnny Pilkington, you know, came out in an interview and, you know, didn't spare Babs and fairness to Brendan Ward, he backed him, you know. And then
he was right, I suppose, not to spare Babs. Like, I mean, Babs washed his hands of any responsibility from losing. It was almost Mourinho-esque. He says, my job is to teach and show them what to do, but it appears to be falling on deaf ears. I'm not being listened to. Like, Christ almighty, how did he expect that to go down?
And the problem was that the players weren't over-enamoured towards Babs, because he didn't do very little in terms of coaching or anything hands-on in terms of the sessions. There was a famous rumour going around that Babs spent more time practicing his chipping on the grass bank in O'Connor Park than he did actually watching the training sessions. So, you know, you can see why the players probably, and the likes of Johnny, came out very strongly against it, because they weren't happy with the overall setup. It just wasn't a good fit, Babs Keaton coming in, you know, taking over Offaly. And then Michael Bond came in, and nobody knew who he was, least of all the players. And, you know, Michael obviously was a principal in Loughrea and well-respected in those parts of the world, but not very well-known on the greater Hurling landscape. And you know, the player said when he came in the first night in training session, they didn't know anything about him. But he came in, he was soft spoken but very, very positive, and you know, the players speak very, very warmly about him from that regard. And you know, by all accounts, they trained 5 nights a week for 2 or 3 weeks, not overly arduous training sessions, but just working on their first touch and working on their skill and bringing that back to the fore. And I think that was one of the things that Michael Bond focused on, was reminding these players that they were a hell of a good team and some serious hurlers in their midst, and just probably reinvigorating them and getting that confidence back into their hurling. And, you know, they stuttered over Antrim, but against Clare the first day, it didn't look like, you know, they were at the races. Clare looked very dominant, but a late rally kind of got Offaly back into that game. Again, the replay, the second game, Clare were quite dominant for most of that game. A bit of a, you know, a rally again in the second half, but nowhere near enough. And it looked like Clare were going to see out that game until that, you know, fierce, unfortunate moment for Jimmy Cooney. Because, yeah, you know, you do feel for him. He was a great hurling man, and, you know,
he never refed again after that.
And would you know? Well, he actually was. He was actually marking my dad in 1981 All-Ireland, and I didn't realise that till many years later. And you know, he was a fierce, genuine man. And you know, I've heard a podcast since where, you know, they spoke about the abuse he got from people, you know, from Offaly and from Clare and wider hurling public, and they had to put their phone in private. And, you know, that was sad times when you hear that type of things for what was only a game of hurling. And, you know, he didn't want to pull that up early. It's just a genuine mistake. But, you know, it led to what a circumstances, you know, the invasion onto the pitch by all the Offaly supporters. I was there myself coming down out of the Cusick stand.
Oh, and don't worry, we're going to get to that in a minute, because I want to go in chronological order, because before we got to those Clare games, there was a whole lot of shit kicking off in Munster, where Waterford and Clare drew the Munster final and then decided to kill each other in the replay.
Yeah, absolute mayhem. And, you know, look, Nan and his management team, you know, Tony Constein and Mike Mack, they picked out the Waterford, you know, Gerard McCarthy and the selectors, they're like, they'd won each, they were ready to go.
Yeah,
they were going to go fighting if it needs to be, let alone the players. So you can imagine how ramped up the players were. And sure, look, Colin Lynch just lost the plot. He was in a haze there for about 30 seconds. He swung every such sort of way and he hit everyone, Clare men, Waterford men, everything. The referee was lucky he was out of the way.
All three lads. He got Tony Brown, I think it was Queeley, and he hit Ollie Baker across the ankles as well. Like, it was mad stuff.
It was mental. But, you know, the fallout from that, obviously, because, you know, the lies upon lies from a Clare perspective about Colin Lynch and, where his granny dying and then having to come out and say his granny didn't die. And, you know, he obviously faced a subsequent ban, and so did Gerlach Nan, and Brian Lawton was sent off, so he was suspended as well. So it was just mental, all the talking points that year. It really was a glorious year.
Oh, it was an unbelievable summer and a beautiful, beautiful weather. All these games were going on in sunshine. Well, maybe not the Waterford Clare one, but Lough Nan said going into that replay, reading this quote's just crazy stuff. Like I've played inter-county for a long time. He said it was like going to war. You just didn't care what was going to happen to yourself individually. It was the only time I ever understood how soldiers could go out into battle and not be afraid of dying. It's like, what planet is Lough Nan on? Like, I mean, like, this was in his book.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? I suppose it gives an insight into Ger's mindset at the time. Look, he was hugely driven, and just, I suppose that first day, something had triggered in him, you know, and probably something was said that just...
Yeah,
like a red rag to the bull, and there was just no way that was going to happen the second day. And
Lough Nan says that one of the Waterford players called one of the Clare players a wife beater or something like that. Now, you know, that's his side of a story, and this is what he was saying, that they were going out to avenge this the second day or something on those lines.
Yeah, and look, I suppose, like any, you don't know the truth in that, as you said, there's one side of it, but like any good manager or good leader, they will find a cause and they will hold in on it and they will, you know, make sure that it's at the forefront of the players when they're going out the next day. We've all been in dressing rooms where that's some lad said or someone said this about, you know, one of your star players or about the team in general. And you just hone in it, and that just becomes the drum that you beat for, you know, the week leading up to the game. So whether it was said or not, you can imagine them doing it, all right.
Yeah, and then Lough Nan obviously went crazy about Colin Lynch, like you touched on that, his suspension. He got suspended for 3 months, so he was gone for all the Offaly games. Lough Nan did his best to try and get him off. Like, you know, the reality is he was swinging like a wild man in the throw-in of the replay. That's an iconic moment in GAA where he's letting Tony Brown have it. And it's not really his form, Colin Lynch, to be like that. But, like, I mean, he was acting like a mad man possessed. And the referee went over to talk to Lough Nan. And as he went over to talk to Lough Nan, Lynch started lettering into Tony Brown. Tony Brown puts his hands up going, what the hell is going on here? Tony Brown didn't have any interest in this.
No, Colin was just, the head was gone. It was as simple as that. Like, it was just,
yeah, the head was gone. Yeah.
You know, it wasn't even, that isn't war. That's just, you know, just gone. Red mist has taken over you. And to hell with the consequences, you'll deal with them after, because he just was possessed, as you said.
Yeah, no, it definitely were. So let's go back then. You obviously mentioned the first replay. Clare got a late score to equalise that then. They were destroying Offaly the second day. Offaly made a great comeback, got it back to within three. Jimmy Cooney blows it up. 3 minutes to go in normal time. What would there have been of injury? At least two or three. So probably 5 or 6 minutes
early.
Yeah,
I think what he said is he pulled it up thinking it was a 30-minute half, was his explanation for it.
Right, so there was 5 minutes left on his watch.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So, like, I mean, the reality is 5 minutes left, clear, 3 points up, they'll take that all day long. Only then you came down out of the stand and sat on the pitch and the game couldn't continue on.
Well, to be fair, Jimmy Cooney was ushered off the field by a couple of stewards in you know, suits and sunglasses, and it was a really strange moment, and it's one you look back on and you have to scratch your head over, you know, who sent them out, or, you know, usually it might be guards or whatever, but they ushered them off over towards, you know, the corner where the canal meets the Cusick stand, and, you know, there's a couple of supporters go running over and give him abuse. Michael Dygan actually runs over and gives him an earful as well, and, you know, it was just kind of a real surreal moment. So they couldn't even organise to try and get the game back and get it played, because he was ushered off the field so quickly. And then a few rogues, we'll call them, came down out of the stand and started to call all the Offaly supporters down. And lo and behold, the whole stand just empties and out onto the field. And it was just mental. You know, every Offaly person that could possibly be there went out into the field that day and sat on the field and just called on, you know, some sort of action. Eventually, actually, Brendan Moore, I think it was, as chairman, had to go up into the Hogan stand where you present the cup and you know, talk to the Offaly people and say, you know, calling them to, you know, it was almost all rallying the troops, because he was like, we'll have our day and Crow Park will listen, you know, so the crowd were going mental. It was like baying for blood. You know, so I felt actually there was an under-21 All-Ireland B final supposed to happen after that game. It was supposed to be Kildare and Kerry. And
yeah, Paul Gallison was playing in that.
Yeah, and they, some of them actually were in the tunnel and in the Hogan stand, the old dressing rooms, and they were ready to come out. And, you know, some of them actually came out into the field just for a few pokes and to see what in the hell was going on. So I remember lads borrowing hurls off them and scoring pints in Crow Park and all this sort of, so to go home and tell people about it. So it was just a kind of a real surreal thing. You know, the fans were there for maybe a good half an hour afterwards, sitting on the field and chanting. And, you know, eventually, I suppose they got their way and we got a replay.
Got the replay. Ah, look, they probably, when Cooney admitted he was wrong, they probably had to get the replay. Then obviously win the replay down in Thurles and end up winning the final. Brian Whelan scored 1-6 after being changed to full forward. Well, 1-4 from full forward. We'll talk about him in performance of the weekend and we'll analyse it in part two. But he had the flu. And Michael Bond said afterwards, he was interviewed directly after the full-time whistle. He says, Brian Whelan had a terrible flu. He was on very heavy medication. His legs were totally, totally dead. Jesus Christ, his legs didn't look totally dead to me. Gary Hanafy, Marty Morrissey said on the sideline reporting that he had a touch of the flu as well. He was taken off in the first half. Luckily enough, they didn't take Brian Whelan off.
That's a fact. They were quick enough to move Mo half back as well, because Brian McAvoy started well and sniped a couple of points off him and had a wide, and, you know, he hurled really, really well. But just before Brian was moved out of wing back, he stopped the ball on the line. You know, PJ Delaney had pulled the ball down. It was a crossfield ball from Ken O'Shea. He was in the top of the right, and PJ Delaney did really well control and pulled on it. And it was Brian Whelan that was on the line stopping a certain goal. And the ball was cleared out the field. So Brian McAvoy obviously was in acres of space, and Brian just didn't get out to him in time to cover him, and McAvoy got his second point. And within seconds, you know, he's moved up to wing forward. But, you know, I think at the time, you know, Marty Morris even says, you know, they went down thinking that this was a ploy by Offaly to get Whelan up in the forwards. And in fact, it was to get him out of the backs. They really weren't happy with his performance at halfback.
Right, okay. We'll leave it there, Brian, anyways, because Joe Dooley is after joining us on the line. Joe, we're talking about the lads having the flu. When did you know they were sick, Brian especially?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't know he was sick at all. It was kept very quiet, Colin. You know, I think he was obviously sick in the couple of days prior to the game, and he said that himself afterwards. But the rest of the team, well, I wasn't aware of it anyway, I'd have to say, and the same with Gary Hanafy. I suppose, like coming into an All-Ireland final, you know, everything, I suppose there's a lot of pressure on players and there's a pressure on your immune system and everything, and everyone is trying to mind themselves. And, you know, so obviously Brian picked up something, and but I'd say it was a kind of a close enough kept secret, really. I personally didn't know he was sick, actually.
Right, because he didn't look like he was sick on the field. Like, I know McAvoy got a couple of points off him, but he wasn't giving him that bad of a skin, and I didn't think.
No, but I'd say, but obviously, our management knew he was sick because they could see that he was struggling, and obviously he knew himself he was. And I was just looking at an interview, I think, at the weekend there, where he was interviewed immediately after the game, and he actually thanked the selectors for not taking him off because he felt that he really should have been taken off on the day. But then when he went up front, then he got a new, you know, you get a new lease of life, probably a little bit of pressure's off, you're in a new position, and he got a second wind, and sure, the rest is history then. I know he moved up in the first half. He got a brilliant point not long after moving up wing forward. You know, he was kind of I suppose it freshened him up and gave him a new lease of life. And Brian McAvoy was kind of on fire the same day as well. And Brian was a speed merchant, and you want to be on your toes to keep with him at that time, you know. So, and moving Michael Deignan back then kind of worked in Michael's favour as well too, because he had often kind of played in the backs with his club and at football level. So when he got facing the ball on the day as well, it kind of helped his game as well. So it was a great move by the selectors, I'd have to say, in fairness to them. And sure, it was one of the main reasons we won the All-Ireland final, you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Come here, I'd say that 1998 summer, it was a lovely hot summer. It was one of the craziest summers hurling has ever seen. Between, like, ye made up a lot of the stories coming out of that year. Then you had Clare and Waterford killing each other down in the Munster final replay. Then we had, it probably started off with the controversy started off after he lost the Leinster final, and the sheep in a heap is the obvious quote. But what Babs said, what Babs really just threw you under the bus, he said, my job is to teach and show them what to do, but it appears to be falling on deaf ears. I'm not being listened to. You know, not taking any responsibility himself.
A bit, Colin. Like, 98 was like, we had won 94. We should have won. Maybe we thought 95. Wexford beat us in 96. The beat us again in 97. So we had won Dalarna in 94. 98 was a huge year for us. And Babs came in, and Johnny Murray was his physical trainer. And you know, they left no stone unturned. In fairness, and we trained probably harder that year than we ever trained. We used to start off with a 3K run down in Banagher, in mucky, heavy ground, and do a lot of work in between, and finish with a 3K run. Like, that was the hardest training that team ever did. And right out to the spring, we were doing it, you know. And we played Meath in the first round, and we got over Meath. And then we played Wexford in the next game. And in 98, of course, it was the 1798 anniversary. And Wexford were really up for it that year. And they were going for three in a row to beat us as well, having beaten us in 96 and 7. And in 98, they kind of led us all through that game. And with maybe 5 minutes to go, Brian Whelan took a free, and he lobbed it into the square, and the ball hit the ground, and Johnny pulled on him and stuck it in the net, and we beat Wexford by, I think, a pint or 2 points. And that was kind of the luck was kind of with us from that day on. Then, you know, we got over Wexford, and we were kind of maybe lucky to get over them, but the training sort of stood to us. Then we went on and we played Kilkenny in the final. And I think the score was 3-9 to 14 points. We actually had we registered more scores than Kilkenny, albeit they got the three goals. But we only lost that game by, I think, 4 points. And the Sunday before the match, we trained in O'Connor Park. And normally, as you know yourself, a Sunday before a big game, it's just a good competitive game for maybe 55-60 minutes. Yeah. And then you kind of, you're keeping yourself fresh. But when we finished our hurling, we started to do this physical training session, and we were running up and down the hill in O'Connor Park in Tullamore. We used to sprint from the wall up to the top of the hill, jog back down, sprint up. We did that, I think, for about 15 times or nearly 20 times in a row the Sunday before the Leinster final. So it was nearly like you were trying to stop a team winning, to be honest. But and I'd say we all did what we were asked, as usual. But I'd say our selectors and even behind the scenes weren't overly happy with that kind of preparation, if you know what I mean. Right. We were used to being fresher going into game. But anyway, when the match was over, obviously Babs had his outbursts, as you've outlined there. And I suppose that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back, I'd say. And he obviously didn't. We had a new trainer in then within a few days. And I'd say, okay, the players weren't happy with what we said, but I think our management and our county board, I'd say, hadn't been happy even prior to the Leinster final with the way preparations were going, you know, and kind of the type of training that we were doing.
Right, and, okay.
So then I'd say Michael Bond then obviously arrived on the scene. I don't know, we were scheduled to train, I think, the following Wednesday night or whatever. And I was there early. I'd say I was always early because I live in Tullamore and I was pushing on at the time, and I always like to be there on time. And next thing, I'd forget who else was in the dressing room. It could have been, I think, Killian Farrell or someone. And Michael Bond came into the dressing room and he took off his jacket and he hung it up on the hanger and he started to take off his shoes. Myself and Killian looked at one another, said, "Who's this fella? Where's he after coming out of, you know?" And I says, "Any harm to ask, any harm to ask you who you are, you know?" And he says, "I'm your new trainer," like that, you know. And I said, "Well, if you are," I said, "you better introduce yourself, you know." He says, "My name is Michael Bond," he said. And so that was the first I heard of him, or my first introduction to him. And that's fact. And so he trained us from there on then, and he was a kind of a breath of fresh air. His positivity. And we went back to complete kind of Offaly hurling as we know it, kind of moving the ball fast and ground hurling, and kind of you know, it was the training session from the minute you went out on the pitch to the time it finished, you were on the move all the time. It was, and I, like, prior to that, I was playing corner forward in the training sessions and the ball wasn't coming in. Johnny Dooley was poking it over the bar and Gary Hennessy and all having a great time, and we in the side in the full forward line were getting no ball, you know, and no one could see anything wrong with that. So when Michael Bond came in, it was all kind of ground hurling. Well, for the first 3 or 4, my tongue was hanging out, the ball was coming every minute and you were trying to get out first to it, and you know, it was just like, I'd say my own personal fitness levels would have went way up kind of in the space of a couple of weeks. But, and he also upped the training levels. We went from kind of maybe 3 nights a week up to, we were doing kind of 5 and 6 nights a week. We did several consecutive nights and it was all ball work and all moving the ball quick, and it was kind of what we had been used to anyway under Eamon Cregan. And But added to that, then we had all the physical training done, and we had the strength in the legs, if you know what I mean. So
right. And come here, Joe. Was Babs trying to coach the ground hurling out of you?
Well, he just wasn't his style. Like, you know, he was kind of more into carrying it, and you know, that kind of possession hurling, I suppose you call it. And it wasn't kind of the Tipperary way, if you know what I mean. Like, it was just, and whereas we were into more flick it on and keep it moving and kind of anticipation, knowing what the guy in front of you was going to do and be reading it, and you know, like, it was kind of simple hurling we played. And I just know myself anyway, like, the ball was, as I say, was coming every 2 minutes, it was coming in, you know, and coming fast, and you were just sprinting out to it. And whereas before it wasn't, someone was getting a handy point, and you know, whereas it's better to keep the ball in play and keep everybody working if you can, generally, you know. And but then, as you say, Michael Bond came in, and we went down to play Kilkenny about maybe a week after the Leinster final, or 10 days. He was after, it was his first, when we were only after playing Kilkenny, I think it was for some, it was in Nolan Park anyway.
That was a mad thing to do. I was reading that, they hammered you in a challenge.
They hammered us in a challenge, but worse than that, Johnny got a belt as well, and he got a lot of stitches and a broken cheekbone. And so, like, that was like adding kind of insult to misery. We were kind of, he was our, like, our key player at the time, himself and Brian Whelan, it was our two standout players. And so we thought we were going to be without kind of Johnny then for the rest of the year. But we played Antrim anyway in the first of the qualifier games, and we got over them. And then our first game then was against Clare, and Johnny was back for that game, but he wore a face guard for the first time ever, and he played corner forward, but as a kind of a third midfielder. So he wasn't in a kind of a man-to-man marking role, and that was purely because of his injury. But like, Clare had been playing Waterford in the Munster Championship, and you know, they were hopping off one another down there, and then you had the whole Gerlachnan affair and all of that, and the sendings off and the Colin Lynch suspension, and all of that was kind of happening in Munster at the same time. So, like, I suppose the pressure was kind of off us, and we were coming in under the radar a little bit, but we knew ourselves we were enjoying our hurling, and things were starting to come right for us. And we sort of said, right, we'll have a right cut off Clare, you know, like, we've nothing to lose here. And then the first day we played him in Croke Park, we should have beaten him. Like, they got a point free in the last puck of the game to level the game. And but then in the second replay then was the following Saturday week. It was after the Omagh bombing, and Clare hit the ground running that day, in fairness to them. We our bus got held up in traffic coming across the city on the Saturday, and it just we only had about 15 or 20 minutes in the dressing room before we got out on the pitch. It was just rushed, and Clare had hit the ground running that day, and I think they were up by maybe 10 or 12 points at one stage in the match.
There were 10 up at half time, and then you started coming back.
There were 10 up at half time, and I think they might even have got the first score of the second half, but at half time the selectors made a lot of switches. They made a lot of positional switches, and they brought in Billy came on at half time as well, and we kind of maybe finished that match with a stronger team than we started it, and we got back into the game. Geordie got a great goal, and then Billy scored a goal, and Johnny Pilkin got a great point. We were all chipping in. The next thing, we had it back to 3 points, and Jimmy Cooney blew up early, and at the time I didn't realise that he had blown early, but in fairness to some of the players, I think Michael Dygman in particular, and even Martin Hannemy knew that he had blown up early, so maybe they were spending time looking up at the clock while we were trying to win matches. But but in fairness to them, they got on to Jimmy Cooney straight away, and of course everybody went mad in the stand as well, and of course that led in obviously to the supporters and the sitting and the field and all of that. So
you 3 minutes of normal time left, and it would have been a bit of injury, and you were flying back. Now there was 3 points in it, so no one will ever know what would have happened in those. But I presume Clare would have preferred just to play on, just to tell the referee, look, we'll play on the extra 5 minutes here now. We're 3 points
well,
up.
Well, of course they would. Yeah, I think by the looks of it was that Jimmy Cooney played 3 minutes injury time, or thought he did, and. So based on that, there was at least another 5 minutes to go. Now we were 3 down. If it was a backing man, I'd back Clare in that situation. To be honest, even though we were going well, but we were fortunate to get the replay. And I think Jimmy Cooney wanted to continue on and play the last 5 minutes, but I think just events overtook him really with people coming onto the field. And then I think Clare and Kerry were playing an under-21 game, and they had come out on the pitch as well. So. But in fairness to him, he admitted straight away that he had made a mistake. And I suppose once he did that, Alan, the GAA had no real alternative but to give a replay then. When that happens, a referee will write a report sometime later, and it'll be written in such a way that it might suit everyone involved. But in this case, he had sort of put his hand up and said he was wrong. And then obviously with the sit-in, there was no choice but to give a replay, and I think Gerard Lucknan realised that too fairly quickly. And
you didn't know until the Sunday morning that the replay was.
Yeah, correct. And if you were kind of just practically thinking about it, it was a good chance we were going to get one, and we were staying in the Spa Hotel for a meal after the match, and so we went up to the premium level and we had a rake of pints, and we all dehydrated. It's not like now where you get hydrated after games. We hydrated ourselves with free drink that time, which is worse than any drink. And then we went out to the Spa Hotel and we had our meal, and after the meal there was a meeting called, and a team meeting, and of course everyone was kind of had a few pints in them, or most people had anyway, and the kind of the discussion was, would we train or not the following evening, and I think Johnny Pilkington didn't want to train, and someone else had problems with something else. Michael Dignan hadn't got a gear bag or a polo top or something, and he had a problem with that, so a whole lot of stuff came out with that a few pints. But next thing, my brother Billy stood up. He says, "I'll be there tomorrow evening anyway, Michael," he said, so, and walked out, and that kind of ended the meeting. So we had agreed that we would train on the Sunday evening anyway, unless we were told otherwise. But the following morning, word came through that we had a replay, and it was going to be in Thurles the following Saturday. So when Michael Dignan came into training the following evening, someone threw him a bag or something just to lighten the mood anyway. But from that minute on, then we were, I suppose we had the all of the Offaly support behind us, Colin, because they had felt they had an ownership in Offaly winning the championship then at this stage after doing the sit-in. And the biggest number of tickets ever sold for an Offaly game was sold for that game in Thurles. I think Christy Todd, the secretary at the time, said we sold something around 15,000 tickets for that match in Thurles.
Jesus.
And even, going into Thurles on that Saturday, we were in Hayes' hotel before the game, which wasn't probably a bad move. When the hotel, when the bus drove into the square in Turles, it was absolutely packed. It was like as if there was a concert or something on, and everyone was banging the side of the bus. This was just on the way to the hotel for a cup of tea and a sandwich before the game. And but we had gone down to Turles the Wednesday of that week for a puck around, and you know the mood was good with everybody. You know, we were after playing the two games against Clare, and we were still in the championship, and everyone was behind us. And I suppose we were getting stronger as well too. Like, say John Try had been injured, and Johnny Pilkington was kind of carrying a bit of an injury as well. And you know, Billy was back in the team. We were kind of getting better with every match as well, to be honest. And
right.
And I think on that day in Turles, we probably had a lot of the neutral support as well for some reason, and that helped too, you know. And
it must have been an unbelievable feeling, everybody banging the bus. Like, the whole country was kind of talking about this, you know. It was the three game series, and then the sit down, and then the replay in Turles on a lovely sunny day. Like, I mean, you were on fire. I think there was only one team going to win that third game.
Yeah, and I remember there was a game on before our match that day, and I think it might only have been a club game or something, but I remember watching it and as we turned to go into the dressing room, a number of the stewards wished us luck, you know, which was unusual. But from our point of view, it was like we were playing the Munster champions. In fairness, Clare had a brilliant team. They were double Munster champions, and they were also All-Ireland champions. And for us to go down and say beat a Munster team as Munster champions in their own backyard was probably the first time it was ever done by a Leinster team. And it was a sweet victory for us, and it kind of made up in some way for 95 as well, you know. So we kind of I suppose all square between ourselves and Clare after that game. And and even like on the day, Colm, like we won by 3 points, but we had a bit of luck as well. Like, in fairness, Stephen Burns made a couple of brilliant saves before the finish as well. And if any of those shots had gone in, you know, any time you win in All-Ireland, you have to have luck. And like, we had it that year. We had it when Johnny scored a goal against Wexford. I suppose we had it with the Michael Bond coming in, and then with the, you know, in Turles as well, and with Jimmy Coney blowing up early. There was a number of different factors that helped us to win that All-Ireland. But the main thing was we had trained harder than we did any other year, and we had lots of good hurlers. We had hurlers good enough to win in All-Ireland. And there was ones we didn't win, like we lost in 95, you know, by the skin of our teeth, and we won in 94. Then you have to have luck to win, you know, and that's the bottom line. And I played in 85 in Galway. Galway had a goal in the second half. The ball went in over the line and hopped back out, but there was no cameras that time or Hawkeye or anything like that, thanks be to God. And we held out to win back there as well.
Right, yeah, you need a bit of luck. Kabir, I suppose the neutrals were rowing in behind you guys, because Loughnane was on the warpath that year, and Clare had gone to town and Waterford in the replay, and maybe they weren't everybody's favourite team that summer.
Yeah, like as a friend of mine said, but Clare went from being the most popular team in Ireland to being the most unpopular within nearly 2 years for some reason. You know, it was just and a lot of it was kind of to do with that. I suppose the Gerard Loughnane thing and the Waterford games and that, they didn't come out well out of that. But so that's the way it goes, I suppose. You know, like when we played Clare in 95, every county in Ireland was shouting for Clare. You know, and that's sport. You know, and that probably got Clare over the line that day as well. I never forget the roar when they came out in the field in 95. You know, they seemed to have everybody shouting for them, whereas in 98 it was the tables had turned. You know, and so that's the way. So, and so we were delighted to get through. And I suppose once we beat Clare, it was brilliant. But the job wasn't finished. We still had to go on and beat Kilkenny. And luckily enough, the game was only 2 weeks later, so we didn't have much time for any kind of for too much back clapping or anything. So we were back training fairly quickly, I think, on the Monday or Tuesday night, and we probably had a media night, and then we were nearly up to game time then. So and through the final, then, you know, we were back against Kilkenny, who we played in the Leinster final. But during all that time, I think they only had the one game, whereas we had the Antrim game, and we had 3 games against Clare. We had 4 games to their one. And we were a much improved team from the Leinster final. And I suppose that's kind of the way it panned out then in the final, you know.
Yeah, your names are written on it, I'd say. So you're the only man in Offaly with 3 All-Ireland titles. Surely the 98...
No,
surely
the 90-
Go on.
Yeah, the Joel, Jim Try has three as well now. But Jim,
oh, Jim Try has it.
Yeah, three. He has indeed. Yeah. Jim played. Jim was a sub in 81, and he played in 94, and he played in 85 as well. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Okay. I don't know where I got that one wrong, but surely 98 was the sweetest one when you take everything into account.
Yeah, well, yeah, I at the weekend there, Annie, I looked at the 85 All-Ireland. It's amazing with this COVID virus, you're starting to look at things that you'd nearly never look at. And that was a great win back that day as well. But 94 was obviously very sweet, you know, with myself and Billy and Johnny playing on the forward line. It was kind of a unique thing and very sweet for my mother and father, especially, you know, like the... But for me, I suppose 98 for me personally would have been the one I got the most satisfaction out of. You know, we played eight games. You know, it was the ups and up and down of the year, like to beat Clare in Turles, to beat Kilkenny in a final as well. You know, like so it was just, and like even if you go to look at the final column, it was, you know, we had luck that day as well. Like we deserved our win. We were deserving winners, and we won by 6 points, and we could have won by more, but. Like Joe Erty got a brilliant goal and set up another one as well for Brian Whelan. Yeah. You know, like he was, and Brian getting sick and moving up and playing so well up in the forward line, and Michael Dyker being, you know, settled in and did a great job at wing back. So it kind of just when it's your turn, it's your turn. You know, that sort of way, and it all helps. You know, so. No, 98 probably would be the one that would like we played double the amount of games we played in 94 or 85, so in that year alone. So
yeah, incredible stuff. Well, come here, Joe, thanks very much for looking back on it with us. We'll talk to you again.
No bother at all. Yeah, all right, cheers, thanks.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
But you didn't let Shamie talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
There's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
No, absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
So Offaly 2-16, Kilkenny 1-13. This was a killing. It was interesting, Brian. Kilkenny won the toss and decided to go against the wind in the first half. And there were 2 points up at halftime. So I'm sure they would have been very, very, very happy going in at halftime, even though Offaly probably got the nicer scores in the first half.
Yeah, they did. And Charlie Carter's goal, you know, things looked ominous for Offaly, you know, at that stage, because, you know, Offaly had started brightly. They looked like they were going okay, but then Charlie got a goal, and you know, Kilkenny obviously were renowned for scoring goals, and Carter looked to be at his best and sniped that goal. He actually, when he rose it, it looked like he'd made a mistake, because he didn't bring it into his hand, but it just fell lovely to him on his left hand side, and he whipped on it, leaving Stephen Byrne no chance.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. He tried to rise it, or did he try to get it up off the ground to get a bounce on it so he could pull on it better, or am I overthinking that?
I'd say he tried to raise it into his hand. Yeah,
right.
The way it worked, obviously, it just, you know, bounced lovely and he whipped on it. But
yeah,
to me, it looked like he tried to raise up his hand. But I know what you're trying to say. But you know, it did look like, you know, Kilkenny, as you said, had done enough with the wind. But you know, the wind was, even in the first half, I did strike me that it seemed to be swirling, because it looked like Offaly had it, and then it might look the flags were going the other way, and then I think it was George Hanning said. You know, at the start of the second half, it looked like the wind had turned around
and favoured
Offaly again. So it clearly did with the flags in the Cusick stand side where the camera was looking into. So maybe it was just a little bit of luck on Offaly's perspective, but it did look to be kind of a hard wind to judge that particular day. Yeah, as you say, Kilkenny looked to have done enough in that first half, but, you know, Joe Erty had done well on Pat O'Neill. Pat O'Neill had conceded a couple of points in play, but Canis Brennan was hurling up a storm, I thought, at centre back. He had completely dominated John Try. John really, he got a fantastic point, but that was set up by Brian's, you know, brilliant. He turned, I think it was Liam Keown or Tom Hickey, I think it was, inside out, and a lovely hand pass over to John Try. But like Canis Brennan, what I thought was excellent there for maybe 45 minutes. It wasn't until Joe Erty got his.
Erty went out on him, yeah. But the thing about Michael Bond, he was very quick to make changes. Like, I mean, Whelan was put into the forwards very quick. Dignan back, obviously, before the game, they moved Johnny Dooley into midfield. Nothing too major about that. But the minute Canis Brennan caught two puck outs in a row, Try was put inside and Erty out on him. Do you know what I mean? He went, like, some managers might wait till half time. He was fairly quick on the draw with these switches.
And he was, and like Gary Hanafy was lifted as well, you know, and they brought in Paddy Mulhare. And Paddy, it took a while to get into the game, but he had a big influence in that second half by dropping deep in particular.
Yeah.
He dropped, you know, what nearly modern day half forwards are doing. He struggled to keep his feet at times, but, you know, he won a lot of ball and won a lot of hard ball and, you know, just kept the ball moving a huge amount. And Michael Kavanagh had started really well in Gary Hanafy, but his influence faded as the game progressed. And, you know, Paddy Mulhare did quite well from that perspective. So you're right, Michael Bond did really well from that perspective. Probably the one loser of all the switches was Joe Dooley, because he started really brightly, got a couple of points, yeah. Got one a corner forward, got one a full forward, and then had to move out into the wing to let Brian Whelan in full forward. And, you know, and Joe's kind of influence on the game kind of it definitely lessened in the second half when he was out with wing forward.
Right, I get you, because he got two lovely scores in the first half and looked like he was on song. Dignan got a lovely one in the first half. John Try actually gave Joe Dooley a lovely pass, a weighted pass for one of his points. And then Brian Whelan gave Erity a lovely ball in front of him. You know, like lovely measured ball, not clearances,
lovely ball,
for another point. So I did think Offaly were played the better stuff. Like DJ and Brian McAvoy changed wings before the start. Why do you think that was? Because surely Kevin Martin would have been a tighter marker than Brian Whelan, who would have been more of a classy hurler.
Because it was a legacy thing, and people won't like to hear this, but it is a kind of well-taught idea here in Offaly that Brian Whelan always had DJ Carey's measure. You know, and
right.
They've proven that up and down through the years that Brian, he relished Martin DJ. You know, they came up at the one age, they'd hurled schools against each other, minor, under 21 and senior, obviously, and they always felt that Brian was able for him. And so it was a ploy, obviously, for Michael Kenny to switch it up, you know, a bigger, stronger player in Brian McAvoy, still quite mobile, obviously, you know, to trouble Sid, which he did. And then, obviously, DJ saw, obviously, the form hurler in Ireland for a number of years at that stage, looked like he might be able to really trouble Kevin Martin. But Kevin Martin gave him, you know, a savage performance that day, just shutting down Kerry. You know,
he was absolutely outstanding, Kevin Martin.
Outstanding,
yeah, have him down in my performance of the weekend list. But here's the thing on Brian Whelan and the switch to wing forward first and then the switch to full forward. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, Brian McAvoy only got 2 points off him now because his third point was off Dignan. And Whelan, as you said, had cleared one off the line. And McAvoy's first point, that came from a throw-in ball where Brian Whelan was lining up beside Charlie Carter to actually contest the throw-in ball. And the referee threw it to two other lads and Brian McAvoy ended up getting the point, which was not Brian Whelan's fault. Now, I've seen worse roastings in my life.
Yeah, and kind of, if you talk to anyone about that All-Ireland, they all say, oh, Brian McAvoy roasted Brian Whelan.
Yeah.
You're 100% right. When you look back, you know, analytically at that game, he didn't. You know, okay, he got a couple of shots off, but you're right. If you actually analyse the moments, you know, it wasn't like he was catching ball and turning them inside out and no. He was being opportunistic and, you know, fair play to him. That's what you want half forwards to do. So he was troubling from that perspective. But, you know, he didn't get the roast and that kind of is the urban legend that's out there.
Yeah, well, that's it. And if Brian Whelan hadn't been sick that day, Michael Bond wouldn't have moved him. The sickness was in Bond's head when he saw him getting one or two. And again, like we said, Michael Bond wasn't afraid to make the changes pretty quickly.
No, he wasn't. And even Michael Dignan coming back, you know, he obviously was more renowned as a forward or even a midfielder, but hadn't hurled extensively in the half-back line. He was moved back there briefly, you know, during the Clare games in one of the drawn games or maybe the replay. But he wasn't, you know, used to hurling a huge amount in the half-back line, particularly for Offaly, maybe. And, you know, so that was a big move, but, you know, he had a fantastic second half in particular.
Yeah, he did
shut down Brian McAvoy. You know,
he did in the second half. Now, McAvoy continued in the first half, giving Dignan trouble as well. Yeah. But no, you're right. Dignan scored a brilliant point from play then at the very end and jumped in the air. Like, I mean,
yeah, he kind of knew. Iconic moment, wasn't it? Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. But it was a brilliant, brilliant score because he cut that puck out and he played it into his hand and then threw it off the hurl it from about halfway. So there was a lot of skill involved in that.
There was, because he went a good, you know, he went diagonally, obviously, so he went a good 40 metres on the solo run, you know, and broke tackles and, you know, caught the initial puck out, as you said, and it was a brilliant score, and it was probably just the icing on the cake. It was, you know, I knew Offaly were, you know, the one that game, but you forget how tight the game had become at that stage
before
that goal, you know.
It wasn't until the goal, there was only two in it, yeah.
You know, and Joe Erty, you know, look, he turned it on for maybe 3 or 4 minutes and was absolutely brilliant goal and got a great point from play straight afterward. But he went to drop pocket, which was a renowned skill in Offaly at the time, that practiced extensively, but completely made a hames of it, caught the heel of the hurl, but you know, Brian just happened to be in the right place at the right time and shunted it into the line. But brilliant, brilliant moment, obviously.
Yeah, and arguably should have given it to Brian Whelehan before he went for his own score altogether. He was left inside on his own.
Oh, probably should, yeah, being honest. Now, look, suppose he was bearing down and going. He was inside or just coming to the 14, so he did have the shot on.
Right.
But, you know, look, you need luck, and that ball was going harmlessly wide, only for Brian just happened to be in the right place. And, you know, look, I suppose that's what all good players do. They make it look so simple and just happen to be there. So we talked about that at the breaking ball in last week's show. So it was one of those moments where Brian just happened to be there.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. Like, I mean, Erity, you're right, in the second half, he arguably had as big an impact as Brian Whelehan in that second half, because at a really crucial stage, he got the goal and then followed up with a point and made the other goal. Was there an element of barging about his goal? I don't want to rain on any parades here, Brian, but, like, I mean, he just ran straight into Keown, I think, the Kilkenny wing back. And on another day, you could arguably say he just ran straight at him.
Yeah, he definitely did, but I suppose that was, it was probably the way the game was played a lot more at the time. You know, once I think he didn't knock over Keown, I think that was the big thing. You know, it looked just more like the two of them stood each other up, and, you know, it was an attempted drop hook as well. I don't know if he actually got the drop on it, but he caught it just at the ground anyway, and it was a brilliant finish. But Joe Dermody probably would have been a little bit disappointed, because, you know, there was a great angle where it's coming from in the goal, and Joe Dermody has his hand in the post, and he keeps tight to that post, but almost too tight, because if he had been, you know, took another yard to his right, he possibly could have covered that shot into the bottom corner, you know.
Yeah, no, it probably flew past him fairly quick. There was a great moment in the second half from an Offaly point of view. I think Offaly defenders were outstanding in the second half. Kilkenny were very disappointing. But there was a moment with Offaly where they swarmed DJ out of it. He couldn't get a shot off. It was Kevin Martin and a few more around him. And then it broke out to Charlie Carter, and Simon Whelehan blocked him down. And then I think he blocked him down a second time. Or Kevin Martin blocked down twice. And then Simon Whelehan blocked down Charlie Carter. That was when Offaly's tail started getting up, and you're almost like, geez, Kilkenny. You see, again, you're coming off Offaly coming through this incredible championship, and Offaly only need a small spark, you know, to say, or Kilkenny to go, geez, their names really are on this.
Yeah, and that was a real iconic moment you're actually talking about there, because the crowd, you could hear them really respond to it as well. And you're right, like the forced DJ back, three of them, I think it was Kevin Keenan and maybe Hubert Rigney and Kevin Martin, as you said, and they forced them back. And then it came out to Carter, and it looked like he was going to get a score, kind of what Kilkenny always do, you know, they take the pressure and they still score. And Simon with a brilliant block down, and, you know, he ended up kicking it out over the ground, but. And then from the next play on as well, DJ breaks inside and, you know, a brilliant hand pass across, but Brian McAvoy hits it wide and, you know, goes harmlessly wide. And he's just kind of got a sense there that, you know, Offaly were doing it right there, you know, that they were, that hunting and packs, it was relentless, and it was just what you needed it to be, you know, at the time. And Simon had a fierce habit of kneeling on the ball, and he got away with it because he was so small, and back then it wasn't a free, it was just a throw-in, so you know, it was a great thing to be doing at the time. You know, he exploited a little thing in the rule book where he just, you know, if it fell near his feet at all and he knew he was under pressure, get down over it, and, you know, then it got a, you know, a throw-in allowed all the backs to reset. So you know, he was tigerish from that perspective. But
you know, Offaly did defend very, very stoutly in that second half, and it wasn't probably until that penalty, which in hindsight was a brilliant penalty to give away from Martin Hennemy. It'd have been a straight red nowadays. You know, he pulled the helmet clean off Peter's leg.
Oh my God. Yeah, he could have pulled the head off him.
You know, that's a real dangerous one, obviously, but he did what he needed to do, you know, because it probably would have been a certain goal if it had been play on. And, you know, I thought Brian Whelan came back from full forward to go on the line. But lovely verbals to PJ Delaney, you know, just, and that, you know, what's naming that DJ, but it was enough to be just trying to unsettle what was going on in around that area at the time, and took his time about going back into the goal. And, you know, Brian was a brilliant competitor from that perspective. And, you know, he'd do whatever it took to win it. And, you know, DJ shot, it was always flying over the bar, never seemed to be anywhere near close to staying underneath the crossbar. And Stephen Byrne's in the form of his life. I think he even would have fancied it, because if you look back at the replay, like, Stephen's hurl was up. It was, you know, he would have fancied himself.
I mean, you'd have to say DJ was a huge disappointment in the game. Like, I mean, was he in his prime at this stage? He was, because he stayed going for a good few more years. Like, I mean, we think it was the All-Ireland final against Clare. What year was that? 2001 or 2002, where he got the point off the hurley, and like, he was still class then. So like, imagine in 98, this was a huge letdown in a performance from DJ in an All-Ireland final.
Yeah, and look, DJ Carey's one of the best hurlers I've ever seen, and exceptional player, but he didn't have a great record for a few of the All-Irelands. You know, 93, he was reasonably quiet. He was good in 92 against Cork, reasonably quiet against Galway for his standards in 93. 98, you know, he was very quiet. And 99, he was very quiet against Cork. But in 2000, he made up for all that. He was absolutely excellent against Offaly when they murdered Offaly in 2000. And that was a real watershed moment probably for DJ on an individual level. And obviously, as you said, he was brilliant again against Clare in 2002. So, there was obviously that kind of sense or feeling at the time that DJ didn't hurl well in All-Ireland, you know. So, but he made up for it in time, as all great hurlers do.
Yeah, no, exactly. Johnny Dooley wasn't really in the game. It was interesting. He was being taken off, which was a huge call for Johnny Dooley to be taken off until Billy Dooley got injured. And then that saved him. They took Billy off instead. So, like, I mean, that, you know, if you were told before the game that Johnny Dooley wasn't going to play well, and that Brian Whelan was dying with the flu, they're your two talismen.
Yeah, like, I didn't think Johnny was that bad. It was hard to tell, was he injured or not? It seemed to be some kind of implication that he was injured. You know, he missed a routine point for him in the first half. You know, Johnny Pilkington, brilliant vision, saw him in acres of space, and you'd expect Johnny to slot that. But I still thought he was doing pretty okay from midfield. I thought Offaly midfield, you know, got the better of it. Maybe not dominated, but, you know, got the better of the exchanges with Philly Larkin and Peter Barry. And Johnny Pilkington, you know, he dropped deep and covered his half-back line a huge amount, particularly in that second
half. He had a good second half. I thought there was a great moment when he burst through Johnny Pilkington and scored a really inspirational point, and Philly Larkin was like, up yours, and he went down and did the very same thing down the other end of the field. But they had a good battle. Like, I mean,
did a good battle, but I thought the boys just about shaded it, you know. And Johnny did get taken off just at the very end. John Ryan came on from, actually, and complete opposite type of hurler. John was about 6'3" and about 17 stone, and he was an animal of a player. Had a brilliant performance for Offaly in 2000 against Cork when Offaly beat the Cork when they were Ireland champions. But John, he actually won the breaking ball, which led to the very last goal. So it's amazing how these small things can have a bearing on the game. He offloaded it to Joe Erty, who ran through, that, you know, had that drop hook that ended up with Brian finishing to net. So, you know, Johnny, he wasn't probably at his best. He was moved to midfield. And, you know, interestingly, he was taken off the frees that year then as well, because, you know, John Troy started on him in the All-Ireland. He missed the routine one in that second half, and you seen him point straight away. The second he missed it, he was pointing to Brian Whelan, was in full forward. Brian, you know, you take the freeze, because, you know, I think that was, he spoke volumes for John too. He realised that, you know, it was a chore to hit the freeze that day, which, happen, you know.
Yeah, he had two wides at the start of the second half. One was from play and one was from
a simple chance from play. Yeah,
yeah.
Off his left. And it was a dangerous moment because Brian Whelan was all on his own. There was half a goal chance on, and he probably did the right thing to try and take a point, but you know, it was a simple point scoring miss, and you know, he was rattled. You know, when he went out to take that free, he kind of looked at the linesman and said, I should be another couple of yards closer here, you know. So I've been there myself when you're not in good form hitting frees and every yard counts, and you know, he missed it, and you know, he got Brian to hit them. But you know, I think that, to me, there's nothing wrong with that, because you're not passing the book, really. You know, you're acknowledging that, you know, you're forcing it, and it is better if someone else takes up the mantle. And look, Brian Whelan, there was no one better to take it up than him, you know.
No, he actually he gave him to Brian Whelan, and but he took one more after that, because Whelan was stepped on, yeah, and he took that. That was an unmissable one anyways. But yeah, we'll mention Brian Whelan. We'll come back with performance at the weekend, and we'll talk a little bit more about him.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys. So I brought them down, and so we actually sold them to. I think I had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkeys still there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
Yeah, you see them on the beaches, never. And so yeah, you can actually, one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey eat a pallet.
Okay, performance of the weekend. And look, let's cut to the chase here. We know who's going to win this, but we'll run through players who played well in the game as well. We'll start with Brian Whelan, who is the winner. We're going to announce the winner at the very start, because he was
it was
just phenomenal. And like, I'm genuinely think that he wasn't doing that badly at wing back. He scored a long range free. He had put in that lovely ball into Erity, and he cleared the ball off the goal line. Like, I mean, I know this is Brian Whelan, but for a lot of players, you'd be starting in All-Ireland fairly well at that stage. Now, McAvoy had sniped him for one point. Then I said the other one from the throw-in, that wasn't his fault. And maybe he got out ahead of him, maybe one or two other balls. But, like, I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say he was getting roasted at all. Then he went to wing forward and he got 2 points, or he got a lovely point from play. And he played full forward, Brian. Like a full forward, like his point from the sideline from John Shride, he turned there like he was going to go off his left and then came back, or he was going to go off his right and then turn back around his left side. Like, that's textbook number 14 play.
Oh, brilliantly. But just his hurling ability is just it's phenomenal. And look, I've no doubt in saying this, he's the best I've ever played with. He just was brilliant. He was so fast. You know, people don't appreciate how fast he was, because he had that kind of languid style. He just kind of looked to be just moving in slow motion, I suppose, as all great players, you know, do. But and looked to have so much time on the ball. But he was lightning fast, and that's why he was able to mark the likes of DJ and these players, because he was able to stay into them and cover huge ground. As you said, when he went up into the forward line, he was just so fleet footed. He turned on a sixpence. Yeah. For that point in the first half, he did the same with his sidestep of Tom Hickey to set up John Tryon. I just thought the point he got in the second half, where, you know, he looked to go on his left and just swung back around and threw two defenders one way, and just, you know, opened it up to loads of space and slotted it over on his right side. I just thought that was one of those moments where you just go, oh my God, you know, it's just beautiful to watch. He's exceptional, honestly. I can't stress that enough, you know.
And the ball stuck to him too. Like, I mean, he won two frees then in the second half on top of his 1-6. Now, he took one of them, you know, but Troy took the other. Like I was saying, the second free he won, like, that was just a dribbly ball along the ground that he slid out to, and you know, it stuck to him and he was fouled. So, like, I mean, it was an all-around brilliant performance. And, like, I don't know, like, was he wasted as a wing-back when you see him playing like that?
Look, he obviously progressed as years went on. He progressed up into the forwards, and particularly for Burr, hurled a bit up there for Offaly, and went up full forward on occasion, hurled once for midfield for Offaly as well. But he was the best half back in the game, for a number of years, and he's just, his performances in the big games were second to none. He has a crazy statistics where he's been man of the match, and I think it's, I could be wrong, there's something like 6 out of 8 All-Irelands or something like this. It's just phenomenal now. You know, he just rose to the occasion on the big days. And like on the club scene here back in Offaly, like there was no one to touch him. He was just, my one memory of Brian always is, you know, a ball maybe in the square and there's hurls flying everywhere, and Brian would just run in, pick the ball up with his hurl and his foot, if you know the skill I'm talking about, and just saunter out of defence as if there was no one. He was only out for a jog, like, and just clear it down the field, and just he just, as I said, was on a different level, and showed he was capable of hurling anywhere. So should he been, was he wasted halfback? I don't think so, because he was just so dominant there for so many years. I just don't think there was anyone to come near him.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Joe Erity, I think, made a huge impact on the game. A point in the first half. Went out in Canis Brennan, obviously, because Canis Brennan was completely dominating. Now, Canis continued to win a few puckouts, but then Erity scored 1-1 off him, which was the changing of the game.
Yeah, it definitely was. And, you know, put Offaly in a real strong foothold. And as we said, Canis Brennan was totally dominant up to that point. You know, Joe had gone out in him, but hadn't had much luck off him. But got the goal, and then after the point after it was a brilliant
point. Brilliant. A break off a puckout.
Yeah, and you kind of got a sense it was going to be Offaly's day when you see a point like that. And it was straight as a die. There was no just barely dropping in and over the bar. That was a fantastic score. And as you said, you know, he set up the last goal for a finish too. So as you said, big bearing in that game. One of the best games I think Joe Erity ever put in an Offaly jersey, you know, and albeit up in the forward line, because obviously Joe was more renowned as a fullback for Burr down through the years, you know.
So, really?
Oh yeah, Joe was a much more renowned defender. He went up in the forwards to maybe to serve a purpose, to break up play and all that side of things. So yeah, no, he did it as need be for Burr when he had to, but a much more accomplished back than a forward.
Right, very interesting. If Brian Whelan hadn't played so much, that Joe Erity performance would have gone down, you know, been talked about for years as well, because he was just outstanding. Like we mentioned Canis Brennan, he had some man to catch a ball, there's no doubt about that. Absolutely. Pat O'Neill was a great man to catch a ball too. Not the most mobile fullback in the world. There's the bang of Jerk Cush off him.
But Pat O'Neill was a more renowned centre back, and he was coming, you know,
wasn't very mobile, was he?
No, and you see, he was pushed back into full back that year, so that was probably, he was a square peg in a round hole. He was a much more happier playing centre back. He was a brilliant hurler for Cairns and Kilkenny down through the years at centre back, and was much happier there, and, you know, and just was prepared to do whatever it took. But he was sniped for, when you look back in that game analytically as well, he was sniped for quite a number of points, because Joe Erity got one off him in the first half, so too did Joe Dooley, and then obviously Brian got a couple in the second half, and the goal for finish was there wasn't much he could do about that goal. So
Pat O'Neill wasn't interested in marking. Like, he was great to catch a ball that came in and clear it, but he was there for the taking as a fullback, because he didn't look like he could get around the field at all.
No, and look, he was probably coming towards the end of his career anyway. So, and as I said, he was much more at home playing centre back, where he probably would have hurled a much freer or looser role, where he, you know, sat in the pocket and hit ball. And, you know, you've seen him come out to hit 65 there at one stage. He was a brilliant long range free taker as well. And even in the first half, actually, DJ won a free himself when he came to centre forward and turned around and showed the ball back to Pat O'Neill. But it was probably too far for Pat to come out from full back to hit it at that particular stage. So DJ ended up hitting it himself and hitting it wide. So that'll show you just the regard that the likes of DJ, he was obviously the same club mate as Pat O'Neill, Young Ireland's Gorn. So it just shows the high regard that he had for the likes of Pat O'Neill.
Yeah, no, exactly. We mentioned Kevin Martin. He never gave DJ a sniff, and DJ was moved around all sorts of positions. But it was the first half, I suppose, where he completely blotted DJ out. And if Kilkenny thought they were going to move DJ across. See, I would have had, in my head, you'd know it obviously a lot better than me, that Kevin Martin would be a much better fella to spoil a lad than Brian Whelan, who you'd want to do a bit more hurling. I didn't know the record Brian had over DJ, but they were definitely barking up the wrong tree, thinking putting DJ over in Kevin Martin, he was going to make hay.
Yeah, well, you see, I suppose they would have looked at it, and of the half back line, they would have thought that Kevin was the weakest link, but lo and behold, they were backing up the wrong tree, as you said, with that one, because Kevin was also an All-Star in 94, a brilliant hurler, strong, very, you know, he's tall, strong in the air, very yeah. fast also, you know. So, you know, he just probably wasn't on the same level as Brian Whelan, but who was? So, you know, yeah. you were saying he was the lesser of the three. It wasn't saying much, you know, because it was a brilliant half-back line for Offaly, because Hubert Rigney, he was tough as nails at centre-back. You know, he was a real old-school centre-back. But noticeably for Offaly in that second half, did some brilliant flicks, you know, last gaps defending, you might call it, but just at the right time, Kevin Martin did it, Kevin Keenan did it, just as someone might be looking to go past them or flick a ball by them, they just got the flick on it at the right time. It was brilliant sticksmanship, I thought, from Offaly.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. I mean, Brian McAvoy deserves a mention for the first half, but his second half performance just ruined it on himself. Like, I mean, he had three bad second half wides, wasn't really in the game. You're right, Deignan got on top of him, and I'm not sure does he even deserve a performance of the weekend nomination. There's not too many Kilkenny players putting their hands up for these nominations other than Canis Brennan.
No, I think you're right, being honest. You know, they didn't hurl anywhere near the level probably that they were capable of. You see, so and almost it was kind of fate that Offaly were going to win that after the, you know, the matches they were after playing against Clare. And then obviously Kilkenny had, you know, beaten Offaly comprehensively in that Leinster final and probably felt they had it over Offaly at that particular case. But, you know, Offaly just totally dominated in most facets of the game. But still, Kilkenny hung in there and, you know, Offaly struggled to put them away.
Yeah.
You know, but you're right. Not too many of them hurled much more than a 6 or a 7 out of 10 when you go back and analyse their performances.
And it's like, I mean, when you think about it, it is a rare game in that you could pick loads of awfully good performances. Kilkenny didn't play well. This was a brilliant Offaly team as well. And there was 2 points in it until the Brian Whelan goal, and that was with 2 minutes to go. How did Kilkenny, like, I suppose Kilkenny deserve credit for staying in a game where they were dreadful.
Yeah, and there was actually a real subdued atmosphere there with a couple of minutes to go as well. You would never have thought, Offaly were on the cusp of winning this All-Ireland. You know, maybe there were the Offaly crowd, and I was up there myself, obviously, but maybe with that fear almost of being pipped again by Kilkenny.
Right.
You didn't feel like, you know, that, you know, it's here, it's for our grasp, and it probably wasn't until that goal went in that it kind of really set home that we were actually going to do it. And
yeah.
And actually beat Kilkenny. But you're right, you have to give Kilkenny credit that they kept in that game. And I think you mentioned a very appropriate point where Philly Larkin scored that point where, you know, he wasn't in the game much, but he got a brilliant score and pulled Kilkenny back into it. Kenny O'Shea was having a good battle with Martin Hanemy in the corner, because he had sniped him for a couple of points, and Stephen Byrne had a brilliant save from him in the first half as well. So, you know, Martin probably just O'Shea'd, but still Kenny O'Shea got a couple of points, and Kevin Keenan was doing a great job on whoever came near him. You know, he started on PJ Delaney, smothered him really well. But Kevin Keenan was brilliant, and I know this from playing against him myself. If he felt he couldn't get to the ball in front of you, he then gave you 4 or 5 yards to go win the ball. And right. when you had the ball won, next minute you looked up at this giant, and it was like, where do I go now? Because he's given you that 4 or 5 yards to come on, run at me. Because if you've already the ball in your hand, you have only one more catch. If you run at him and you try to run into him, he'll smother you up with his hands. So then you have your second play. You know, you have your second catch, because you have to take the catch in the tackle. And you'd know where to go. He was so big, you couldn't strike over your shoulder because he'd get the block down. So he really had it down to a T in terms of his defending from that perspective. And if he realised he wasn't going to win it, he let you win it. So it might strike people that, you know, oh, he was lagging behind. He wasn't. He knew exactly what he was doing there.
Right, okay, that's interesting. Right, I suppose other mentions, Deignan, Pilkington in the second half, especially Simon Whelan, even though Charity got a goal off him, there was an element of luck to that. Well, it was from a monster puck out, actually, against the wind. If that was against the wind, it landed maybe on the 21. I thought Simon Whelan was very good. Ah, you could name a good few Offaly players that played very well. But Brian Whelan, like, you can't look past his performance in All-Ireland final, 1-6 after being moved and after having the flu and all these things. And interesting that Joe Dooley said that he didn't know Brian Whelan was sick, that they kept it that quiet. I suppose psychologically, that's the last thing the team wanted to hear, was that Brian wasn't feeling well. So it was Michael Bond and Brian kept that pretty quiet.
Yeah, and look, the tallies man that Brian was, and he was a great character as well as everything. And he was a very strong individual, obviously, and he dominated the dressing room. You know, he was a brilliant talker inside the dressing room. He wasn't afraid to make switches, particularly for Burr. You know, he dominated on the field and made switches on as he saw fit, and had that kind of understanding with obviously his father, Padjo, when he was manager and other managers took over. But, you know, he was the go-to man from an off-field perspective. They had brilliant hurlers, obviously, and brilliant individuals, but Brian was head and shoulders above everyone else from that perspective. A brilliant leader, and had such high expectations of himself and all the players around him. You know, he could get narky if people didn't consistently play to those, you know, high levels. But the thing about it is, you know, Offaly had this perception as being this team, you know, the party team, and you know, they hear the stories about Johnny Pilkington and John Troy smoking fags at halftime in the dressing room, or in the dressing room, and, you know, enjoying a few pints. But these guys were serious hurlers. Like, they didn't win All-Ireland just by chance. You know, they loved to kind of have this idea out there that they were, you know, happy-go-lucky in their approach to hurling. Yeah, but they were terrific competitors. You know, Johnny Pilkington was one of the best midfielders of any generation, and was a brilliant hurler, and was a brilliant athlete as well.
But they
were quite happy though to have this kind of talk out there that they didn't really take the hurling serious.
Right. But back then, listen, the way I look at it, back then everybody enjoyed a pint, but everyone trained really hard. If you're any sort of an inter-county player, you enjoyed hard training, but you enjoyed celebrating as well. I think it was called, like, I suppose, burning the candle at both ends. Everybody was at it. I suppose if a few stories get out, then one county is seen, you know, as more than, now obviously Pilkington was a great character, but I'd say it was a lot of counties were similar and still are similar in that regard. Come here, to finish up, you've started up a podcast yourself there. You're not a competitor of the GAR Hurling Show anyways, more of a complimentary podcast, I'd say, right?
Exactly, Willie. Thanks very much. Yeah, no, I started up a Hurler's Life, a pure hobby from my perspective. Just interviewing past hurlers, you know, some of the greats of the game, and we had John Milan on the other day, and we've Anthony Daly and Jackie Turrell to come up, and just great bit of chat and talking about some of the regrets and best managers they played under, and, you know, they picked the best six they ever played with, and one from each line. So great hurling chat, you know, that's all I wanted from it. Was, you know, as I said, it's a hobby for me, and I love talking about hurling, and what better to talk to some of the players maybe that I played against, or maybe some of the managers that I came up against. So, you know, it's just enjoyment from my perspective.
Brilliant stuff. So what, give us the name of it again?
A Hurler's Life.
A Hurler's Life. Okay, so get subscribing to A Hurler's Life. But the GAR Hurling Show first. It has to be.
It has to be.
All right, Brian, great stuff. Thanks very much.
Thanks
for today. I'm going to leave you with one of the all-time classic GAA songs, considering Offaly won the All-Ireland this year.
When the ball's in the sky in Croke Park in July, that's Jodhuli. When the ball's in the air, who's that man in the square? That's Jodhuli. What a boy, pride and joy of Uvali. He's in gold, white and green from the fields of Clarine. That's Jodhuli.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken. Let it go, because I won't see you later.